brush up on you.
How are we gonna restore 15 to 20 million jobs? I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio, broadcasting here on 860 AM. And as you know, we have a great radio signal, and people can also listen to us on the internet simply by logging on to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. And of course, each week we send out a rebroadcast link, and of course that is emailed to thousands of people, and also people are able to listen during their free time. Some people are working at this time, can't do it. Some people tell me they listen at 7 o'clock at night, or, you know, when they get up in the morning before they go out. They like to hear what we have to say. And I'm very pleased to hear that people say that we have more common sense discussed on this broadcast than most broadcasts, because everybody is trying to dance around, trying to appease somebody. Well, today we're going to have sort of an open forum, and we're going to have two of our great panel members with us, Larkin Conley and Rich Logis, and Mark Andel is on a special assignment today. And first of all, I would like to say a big thank you to our state representative from Philadelphia, Joe Hohenstein, who was with us last week on the broadcast, and he did a good job. He was an extremely nice guy. I saw Joe and many of the political people in the Bridesburg Memorial Day Parade, and I want to thank Joe Hohenstein and all of the people who helped to make all these special events so important. We commemorated Memorial Day. We honored all who fought and died for freedom and the ideals of America. And of course, with the inflation, the aftermath of the pandemic, and all that's going on in the world, people are concerned about the future of America right now and for future generations. Participating in the Bridesburg Memorial Day Parade and being up there on the stage, I had an opportunity to speak to a lot of people. And it's great to speak to them because I like hearing what they have to say, especially our listeners, letting me know that we're doing a good job. In fact, one particular lady said to me, "I'm very pleased that you are speaking up and saying that we have almost sold our soul to foreign countries, and that we're suffering now because we did sell our soul to foreign countries." And the leadership in America sat back and said absolutely nothing. I also learned, as I hear very often, that people are not devoted to any past presidents or past senators or anybody else. They're not interested. Americans are looking for a new beginning. Something new has to happen. And everybody agrees if something new does not happen, it's not going to be our fault because we're trying. It's going to be because the overwhelming amount of people have their minds made up way before they enter the voting booth. And the good people, in many cases, have not been going out to vote as they should. And so we find ourselves in a very, very difficult situation. It's a sad reality when you consider that America was the leading producer of products that are sold in America right now for over 200 years, whether it was horseshoes being made in some state and the horses getting their horseshoes today. Most of that stuff is brought in from foreign countries, and that's unfortunate to hear that. And by the way, people agree with all of us that there's no reason we should be worrying about the supply chain of stuff coming in. We should be worrying about the fact that 70, 80, and 90% in some cases of the items that were made in America for years and years are now being imported, brought to America from foreign countries. And by the way, nobody cares also about the delay in the products being brought in. Nobody cares. They're simply not concerned. They want to see those products made here in the United States of America, and they want the next Congress to devote most of their time and attention on discussing ways to bring businesses back to where they should be. Will that happen? I don't know. It's going to depend on the candidates. It's really going to depend on the candidates. We need to get back to being a people that invents things, people that make things, people that distribute things. In fact, if we were doing what we should have been doing for the last 35, 40 years, the things that we're discussing right now would never even be on the agenda of what we have to discuss. But because the leaders had their friends and others that were allowing them to be influenced to take the stuff out of America, could you imagine somebody coming into your house and taking in their truck all the furniture from your house? You'd say, what's that? When I come home, I have nothing in the house to sit on, eat at, or whatever. Well, that's what they did. They came in. They took a lot of our industries. These foreign countries bought up a lot of our industries and put a new name on it. And just, it's coming to America, and nobody remembers the old name. The newer people don't remember the old name. And they just buy it because it's just the way it is. So your participation with the Buy American Made, Support American Workers, and Look Out for Our Fellow Americans First has really been very well received, and I enjoy hearing the comments of the people there at the Bridesburg Memorial Day Parade, which was a great event. If you have more things you'd like to say, you just email them to me at michael@AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Just michael@AmericanWorkersRadio.com. And before I go to our panelists today, we have to remember that spending our money on products and services in America is really the engine of America's economy. The engine of America's economy would be much, much better if 50 or 60% of everything that we touched was made here in this country, where the final purchase is made. Can you imagine? 35 years ago, storekeepers tell me, because I love to go around and talk to the people, they say, we never got in all these cartons and stuff like that, foreign this, foreign that. It was all made here. They tell me exactly the towns that where it was made. And I remember, you know, getting those things when my dad started the store. Nothing came in that was foreign. Nothing. Today, 80-90% is foreign. With that in mind, I'm going to turn to Larkin Conley. And Larkin, how are you doing? And if you were president today, what would you do to change our situation?
Wow, that's a very, very loaded question. You know, Michael, a lot of our problems have to do with changes that have absolutely nothing to do with factories and workers and that type of thing. The lion's share of our problems lie in the cultural changes that have come to this country through a variety of methods, probably mainly politicians who don't give a damn and don't respond to the changes that they saw. Anybody living and breathing could see the changes. But there's been a change in the press. Congress is completely incapable of doing anything, of completing anything. It's almost frightening and scary that we pay them as much money as we do and that their body costs as much money as it does, but virtually doesn't accomplish a thing. I have to congratulate them. Last week, I think they had a great week naming post offices, and I know that's very important for our contingency to get the post offices named properly. But listen, it's a cultural change. It has to be a cultural change. And that cultural change starts with initiative amongst our workers. Rather than stand around and go, listen, people who are independent individuals, they're heroes. Victims aren't heroes. People who overcome challenges are heroes, not the ones who constantly blame others and feel helpless about themselves. Nothing about that is attractive. Nothing about being a victim in this country is attractive. But there are people who have experienced true evils that have made them into victims. I'm not saying victims don't exist, but the victimhood mentality is spreading across America today. It's a weakness. And unfortunately, we're turning victims into heroes. And heroes are not special people anymore. Victims become heroes as a result of the way that they fight back, that they make changes in their life. I can be a victim of a plant closing down. I could be a victim of a car accident. I could be a victim of so many different things that I didn't create or cause. It's how I react and how I'm willing to make changes and how I'm willing to fix things that makes a victim a hero. You have people going, oh, my gosh, look at what happened to you. I feel so sorry for you, as if you were helpless and needed the government to come to your aid. That's what everybody's looking for anymore. How's the government going to fix my life? If you can walk, if you can talk, if you can read, if you can taste, smell, or think, you have the capability to do something big in your life and repair your victimhood.
Mark, and that's, I can't tell you, you are perfectly 1,000% correct. I'm going to add something to that.
I would say one thing. We have the true example of a victim reacting, because we know that Mark Andrew can walk. We know he can talk. We know he can think and taste and smell. But we know he can think. And we know that he has the initiative. What if he would have stood around when the Chinese stole his business, his welding business? If he would have stood around and said, do you have any? Call the Congress guy and see if Congress has any money for me, because I've been victimized by China. Mark went out and kicked butt, mm-hmm. and he made a difference. And he pushed and made things happen. That's what the country needs more of. Absolutely, from the word get-go, we are missing the initiative to become better and stronger people rather than just looking at, you know, and it comes all the way down to crime also. This is a guy, 9 felony arrests, should have been incarcerated, if not in a mental health facility, at least in a jail. Who cares? But he lit a homeless guy who was sleeping under a bridge abutment against the wall. He walked over, stood over top of him, poured gasoline on his head, and lit him on fire.
Right, right.
And the guy shouldn't have been out of jail to begin with. What part of that don't we get?
And, you know, Larkin, to bring this to the attention of the elected people, their response is very strange to me. Oh, this is just a changing way of life. I'm sorry to tell you, if you go to many other countries of the world, this is not how they view America. They view America as a place that too many government people are running our lives. You know, Larkin, when do you think the people in America became too dependent upon government?
I think, listen, we all know about the Reagan years, but let's concentrate a little bit on the Clinton years. Bill Clinton came in as a president, as a liberal, but he sat there in his office, examined the current situation, and said, "Well, this pony won't ride. Something's got to change here somewhere." And he really reorganized the welfare system in this country. He did a magnificent job of it, and I think as we developed into a nation that says, you know, if you're alive and breathing and you don't have a job, the government owes you a salary. Well, I don't argue with that so much as a conservative. I don't argue with that. But damn it, put on your coveralls and your hat and pick up your damn broom and go out and sweep the streets. Go out and clean up. Go out and work for that money. I don't have a problem at all with the city of St. Augustine, the city of Florida, or this country putting people to work and paying them. That's what the only, and it's only partially, but the only successful government invented program, WPA, it's the only one that ever worked. You can't name one other government established program that functions properly. None of them. The government is totally incapable of doing anything and getting it done properly, and it's really an unfortunate set of circumstances, but it's the absolute truth.
You're right. And, you know, talking about the Clinton times, let me just say what I remember of the Clinton times. There was the dot-com revolution at the time. So yep. Everybody was really focused on dot-com. And the changes that were made in the welfare system and other programs, too, where they started to close down regular unemployment offices and you were able to do things, you know, over the phone and over the internet. This also hurt. I mean, before, 20 years ago, I will tell you that people had to go out and get a card or a number and a name of a company they visited to try to get a job. You were just not handed your money without any kind of effort. I think and I believe that there should be a system in place in America that if you are not employed, you are on welfare, you are retraining or whatever, and you don't have an income, then the government should, if they're helping you out, the government should ask you to go to a job training program so that you can gain the skills to get back into the workforce no matter what your situation is. By not doing that and not allowing our trade programs and all to be a big part of what we do in school for our middle school and our high schools, we've destroyed America. We hurt ourselves because right now many companies want to do things to expand here in the United States, especially with all the issues that they went through over the supply chain issues and everything else. And many people were saying, now's the time to do it. Now's the time to do it. Getting the qualified workers is not as easy as people imagine. Can't do it.
And I'm going to take that qualified workers one more step. Back in the day, and I'm going to say '80s and most of the '90s, probably the late '70s, I was running a Gulf oil company. Every once in a while, actually probably once a year, I would get a phone call from a guy who the nickname, legitimately, his nickname was The Axe. His first name was Max, and everybody that worked around him called him Max The Axe. And Max would call, and he'd say, "Larkin, how you doing?" I'd say, "I'm fine, Max, how are you doing?" He was it might have been the comptroller of the of Gulf Oil in back in that that time for Gulf Oil U.S. And he'd say, "How are you doing?" I said, "I'm fine. I'm fine." He said, "Bob, when's the last time you took a little cold, hard look at your staff?" And I said, "Well, you know, I look at them and look at it every day, and I talk to them every day." And he said, "Well, it's time to have a corporate purging." And I said, "Well, what the hell is a purging?" And he said, "I want you to force rank everybody that works in your line of sight, from the best you have to the very worst at that job. And I want you to do it by job." And I said, "Okay, I could probably do that just sitting in my office, but whatever." And they'd say, "I want you to remove the bottom 25%. Gone. Gone. Help them in any way that you can, but they need to find a new vocation. Period. Amen. Because if they're on your bottom of your list, it's time to make an adjustment and get better. You want to get rid of the bottom 25% performers for whatever reason. Might be a mental reason, might be an emotional reason, might be they're just flat lazy and you didn't know that when you hired them. But you've got to take a look at your staff and you have to occasionally purge it. That's how you get to become better. You don't invent procedures that make you any better if you don't have the people to carry those procedures out." And I listened to that and I thought, wow, how the hell am I going to do this? I mean, I know these people, I know their families, and this is where it comes to. Well, in major corporations, as I read Harvard reviews and other, you know, business vehicles that I could get my hands on, every corporation does it. It did it back then. Every one of them. And I was just getting my lesson at that point. But we don't do that. We hire somebody. You're an employee for life. Don't worry about it. And we'll give you increases in your pay because if you join the union, you're going to automatically get increases, which, by the way, drives inflation. Inflation doesn't drive wages. Wages more often drive inflation. But at any rate, look at where we are today in an inflationary society. We've got people out there now voluntarily paying minimum wage of $15 an hour. More than you know are out there doing exactly this. So that's what we've got. We've gotten to a point where we treat everybody like a victim. We treat them like a pansy. We don't want to hurt you. We, you know, don't cry. You know, I'm sorry. We'll make room for you somewhere. We'll fix it. So do you know how to make lunch sandwiches? Maybe you could run our cafeteria. Come on. You just have to make yourself better every day. And there are those circumstances where in order to become better, you've got to make a change.
You know, Larkin, and, you're right. I want to tell you a little something that I experienced this past week. I was at a store, and I was going in to pick up some coffee in the morning, and a young lady, and I mean young, maybe 28, 30 years old, was outside, never saw her after that one time. She was fairly well-dressed, and she tried to hit me for some change. She says to me, "Do you have a dollar to spare or some change?" And I said, I looked at her, I said, "What's the matter?" And she says, I'm down and out. I said, "Someone like yourself should not be down and out." I said, you have a lot of, you're a nice looking girl. You're halfly, you know, you're very presentable. I said, half the battle's done. You need to go out and try to get a job. Where's your resume? And she said, "Oh, people don't use resumes anymore." I said, "Oh, I hate to tell you, they still do. And I'm going to give you a little point. If you took a resume and you went 1 mile from this place in Northeast Philadelphia, I'm sure you would be able to find a job. She says, why a resume? I said, because when you walk in the door, someone sees you. You say, I'm here to see if you have any jobs. You throw down your resume, and no one would know that you're down on your luck right now. No one, because you present yourself well and you're well-spoken. Well, I'm not to that point yet. I said, no, you are to that point. Get a resume and go 1 mile from this place to all the companies that you see open. Knock on the door. Go in and say you're looking for employment. And I said, thank you. It was great to meet you. She was never there at the store again because I'm the kind who would ask you, how'd you make out? You tried to bum me again. I'd say, did you take my advice? You know, you know how it is.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we're not providing our young people with the confidence that they need. They need to know that they mean something. I don't know. I didn't get into the whole story with her, you know, what happened and this and that. But there's just too many of these people around. When I hear America needs so many employees, they're talking like 10 million employees. Larkin, what we spoke about a few minutes ago is instead of people just getting money through welfare and poverty and others, they should go to job training programs so that when employees are needed, they're already in some kind of a database that will call so-and-so or call so-and-so because they may be in the market for a job. We're not doing that. We took down all those systems at the unemployment offices and all, and just put them online. And it's very easy to do this and that. Instead of speaking directly to the people, we lost out in America. I hate to say it, but in other countries, you must show up physically, face to face with a person to tell them your situation. In America, you don't have to do that. In most cases, you don't have to do it. They keep pushing you. Oh, don't go to this place. Don't go to there. Don't go to urgent care. Don't, you know, pushing you everywhere instead of resolving your issue right on the spot. It's just like this energy thing that we're going through. Would you believe in 17 months, Larkin, we went from $2.50 a gallon to near $5 a gallon? In some places, it's $6. We have to be realistic. No one in our national elected system of 535 people paid very well to do a job is looking at the demands and the needs of the American people. We have to focus on every type of energy needed to keep us a success, us, the American people, a success, not just on green energy. Green energy will happen as time goes on, but it's not going to happen at the snap of a finger. It's not going to happen. And by the way, the inflation that we are experiencing is self-induced by this act of President Biden to slow down and stop the drilling, the offshore drilling, and everything else that we had going on for many, many years, and was expanding for many, many years, and whoever was president was promoting it in the past. How some president can come in and all of a sudden shut everything down, and the rest of the 535 elected people did nothing. Remember, we spoke many times in the past over an Emergency Energy Act to try to get the Congress to review it. Nobody wants to insult the president. It's the president's choice. It's one of the things that he can do. He can't sign any kind of legislation for guns or anything else. But for energy, I'm sorry, it should be something that should be done by the entire House and Senate, not by any one person. All of this inflation, the gas, the food going up, or everything that we're experiencing, clothing going up, delivery going up, everything is going up over one single action, an executive order slowing all this stuff down. But what makes it even more insane is that now we slowed down our production in America, and we're begging other countries to bring the stuff to America to sell when we have it right here on our lands and at our neighbors' lands, Canada, and all these other places where the pipelines were supposed to go. And we're not saying a word. We're just, And some of the politicians, and I should name them, and I may name them before the election. I'll do it. Because I asked them about this Emergency Energy Act. They were saying, well, we don't want to insult the president. I said, you're insulting every American by not taking action. Every American, whether they're 1 year old or 100 years old, their inflation is not something they're supposed to be worrying about. But Larkin, yeah. Can I turn to Mr. Rich Logis? Rich, how are you doing?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Larkin. Good morning to everyone. Mark, wherever you are right now, I know you're out leading Made in America as you've been doing faithfully for a decade plus. So, well, where to start, Michael? Let me think about this. I've been taking a lot of notes here as you guys are speaking. I think I got a good place to start. You know, let me tell you guys the book that's on my desk right now that I'm reading. You guys want to know what I'm reading right now,
yes.
Michael?
Yes.
I'm going to tell you what book I'm reading. I'm reading the book entitled A Promised Land. It's the first memoir of President Obama. And I'm going to tell you why I'm reading it. Here's why I'm reading it, Michael. Because one trait of President Obama's that I very much admire is that he's a person who exhibited a lot of patience as president. He's also a person who understood that progress is not an overnight sensation. It's not instant gratification. It zigs and zags, ebbs and flows. And we keep at it because that's the experiment that was created for us, which was to try to keep perfecting this union and that pursuit. So I'm reading this book right now. And I'm trying to read it, Larkin, to prevent and full admission here, to try to prevent and prohibit cynicism from taking over my way of thinking. And I think, Michael, that I can pinpoint when in the modern era our politics became so traumatizing. And I think it started with President Obama's election. I really do. Now, I am not faulting him for others who feel traumatized, but that's when it started, Michael. And after his election and re-election, we then had Donald Trump's election. And while I do think that some of the ire directed at Trump by Democrats is warranted, what I have done recently, Larkin, is I've tried to tell both Republicans and Democrats that we need to start moving on and dealing with and healing from whatever trauma that exists in a residual form between Barack Obama and Donald Trump's elections, Michael. And until that starts to happen, we're going to just keep stuck. We're going to get stuck in this rut. We'll be having the same discussion forever because people will still be in a cycle of paralysis. The country has increasingly, Michael, become a suffocating place. We're a country that accepts and we are indifferent to mass casualty crises. As I said a few weeks ago, when I came on this show, as I do week in and week out, and I said that what I said about Trump and how I believe he's irreparably impugned the integrity of the presidency, I say that, Michael, as a person who, you know, my Trump-supporting bona fides were never in question for 4+ years, and I say that. So if I could say that, if I could move on from the Donald Trump presidency, my answer to Democrats is you can too. And my answer to Republicans who – and right now, Michael, if there are people listening, I'm going to explain to you right now what political traumatization is. Anyone listening right now to this show who recoils, whose heart rate surges to 150 beats a minute just at the mere mention of Barack Obama's name, that's a person who's dealing with political traumatization. And, Michael, I'm telling you that there are millions and millions and millions of our fellow countrymen and women. To start solving these problems, people in elected positions are not going to step up and show leadership when they know that so many within the voting electorate want to be lied to, Michael. They do. That's not, and look, I'm not casting aspersions on people and morally judging them, but we have become a country where there are millions and millions and millions of people, voters, adults, they want to be lied to. So, Michael, how effective are we going to create, what kind of country are we going to create for the young generation, your grandkids, Larkin, your kids, your grandkids, Henry's kids, my kids, if the adults in the room all want to be lied to? What kind of country are we going to create for the young people? Now, I'm not saying, Michael, you or I'm not, look, I can't answer that question for someone. When I ask people, I ask an individual, are you a person who wants to be lied to? Everyone says, no. And I say, you lying to me now? You're not lying to me right now. That's what it is, Michael. Now, I know I said a few weeks ago, there's no savior walking through the door. But there should be an expectation. And this is not me saying I'm looking for a Messiah, Larkin. But the people who are in elected positions, it is their responsibility to lead. Larkin, when you were running a team at your company, Michael, right, when Henry has a project for a website, the customer, the client, the coworkers, they're expecting those in charge to lead, right or wrong, Michael?
Right.
They're expecting them to lead.
That's, absolutely.
And the fact that expecting people in positions of influence and leadership, expecting them to lead, should not be a utopian wish. It shouldn't be. And after what happened in Buffalo and in Texas, I sat back, stupid me, Charlie Brown, waiting for Lucy to hold the football. I sat back and thought, is there going to be some kind of visual for the country where Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy can together show leadership on trying to find some solutions, not panaceas, not magic elixirs, but some solutions to reduce the amount of casualties we have every year from firearms? I thought, might it happen? Now, I wasn't that hopeful, Larkin, but I held out a little bit of hope. And lo and behold, we were all let down again. So, Michael, you're asking about the kind of country, Maine, America, what kind of country we're going to leave for the young people. When people in positions of leadership fail to lead, the people will fail. Direct cause and effect, Michael.
You know, Rich, I agree with you. There's one thing that I think happened in this country, and that was 9/11 under George Bush. And then it continued through Obama, and it continued through Trump, and now through Biden. There's something missing in our country, which is something I think has to be rectified in the next election. And let me put myself on the record by saying, I hope that no one that was president before will run for president again. Because we need a new person in this country. But we need a campaign that talks about our needs right here in the United States of America. What are we going to do to put ourselves up the steps of the stairway, up the steps of a ladder? We need a president that's not going to sound good and talk, you know, all around the merry-go-round, but we want to know what's really on that person's agenda. And I don't think that one person, I saw this especially through this executive order where all this chaos has happened in the United States over gas and energy. We should not allow that. Everything done in this country should be done with the House and Senate first and the president's approval second. No president should be able to sit down and just be able to stop this oil and drilling of, you know, natural gas, the whole deal. No one should be able to do that. That's number one. The next president has to say, we're going to put a lot of these things together and start working together in the House and Congress as human beings representing the people of the United States of America. I don't remember anything in particular that any campaign of a president brought about, but I would remember one thing if it was part of their campaign. What are they going to do to get jobs back here in the United States of America? Did President Bush say that? Did President Obama say that? Did President Trump say that? Did President Biden say that? Maybe, but it was just in passing. I need to see concrete plans. If you're building a house, you design the structures. You start building brick by brick. There's nobody been doing that for too many years. It's just become a political game. And when people tell me, Michael, I don't go out to vote because it's all rigmarole. All I'm doing is going out to vote for somebody who's going to do nothing to really help us. And I tell people to always remember, every freedom that we have also bears responsibility. We had the freedom to buy and sell whatever we wanted in America. Now it's our responsibility to change those actions and bring America back to the way it was 35 years ago. Don't we have the land in this country to make everything? And by this, when I say manufacturing, Rich Larkin and everyone listening, we have the land in this country. We can do anything we want, build the most modern facilities, and everything that we touch is considered manufactured, including our cell phones and our computers and the clocks that we look at. Somebody had to manufacture it in order for us to have it. But when you look at the labeling, Henry and I were talking earlier. My first phone was a gift, and it was given to me, and I looked, and it was from Texas Instrument. And that was in the late 90s. And it was made in Texas. Today, that same phone is made anywhere but in America. Why not? Are our people not able to do it? Are they not intelligent enough? And you know what? I did speak to a manufacturer, and I was rather flabbergasted. I said, we spoke to people who were candidates for governor and all, asking them to bring some of these products to Pennsylvania. And they said, oh, it's impossible now that the company moved overseas. Nothing is impossible to me. It's how you take it. I want to see those things back. I told you maybe 6 months or 8 months ago when I spoke to a dealer, a phone dealer. He said, well, there's so many phones sold in the United States of America. The only country that has enough manpower to do it is China. And I looked at him and I said, okay, I can understand that. But why can't we make the American version of the amount of phones that we make and use, we use in America, make them in America? He didn't have an argument. He said, the thing is, common sense is not that common anymore. It's like the girl I mentioned earlier with the resume. She immediately barked back at me, resumes are no longer needed. I said, no, if I was the guy welcoming you to come to our business with a resume, I'd think, wow, this is nice. A person came in. It's not just electronically being sent to me. I'm physically visualizing this person. Well, we can visualize everything because we go into the stores to pick it up. But we have never brought this to the attention of the people who are in those elected offices and tell them we want those products made here in America. And if not, we want such a tariff put on that it'll be less expensive to make them in America than import them to America. Less expensive to make them in America than import them to America. There were presidents who put tariffs on items coming from overseas. I think that's very important. I think that tariffs, they call it tariffs in America. In Europe, it's called a value-added tax. You've been to Europe, Rich. Everything that you bought that was made in America or China or whatever had a value-added tax put on it. They could have called it a tariff. They don't use that word. Value of VAT tax. A value-added tax. Why can't we have that in America? And the money from that tax, use it to have training programs for the people who need the training. What do you say, Larkin?
Well, I think your ideas are valid. My issue with it is, I had a conversation with a guy the other day. I was standing in my front yard. He was giving me a quote to put a brick patio in. Let's just leave it at that. And I said to him after we had talked and talked price and when he could do it. And, I had a handful of questions about how I was going to do it. I said, so how is it out there? And he said, what do you mean? And I said, how's business? How are you doing? And he said, well, he said, it's the strangest, he's my age, said it's the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. He said, I've been doing this masonry work all my life. I graduated from high school and went to work for my father and took over his company when he decided he had had enough, continued to pay him, a stipend as if he were working even when he wasn't. And he said, and we were out there hustling, constantly hustling. I drove a car a lot of times to different places trying to talk people into considering this or considering that to be done. And he said, now I don't have to send anybody anywhere. There's so much work out there, I don't know which way to look. I really don't. And he said, I don't have the manpower to do the work. I just don't have it. And I said, is it trained manpower? And he said, hell with training. I'll train you. I'll teach you how to be a mason. In fact, if you don't have the brain, just the normal brain power to become a mason, then I'm talking to the wrong person. No, I'll train you. It doesn't have anything to do with that. He said it genuinely has to do with the fact that people don't want to work.
I
get people, they'll work for me for a day. They'll carry hod or sand or push a wheelbarrow for the balance of the day, and then all of a sudden, they've got a headache or I get the call the next morning. I'm sorry, I can't come in. I'm not feeling well. And he said, I don't ever hear from them again. He said, I wish I could tell you how many times I've actually had people do a day's work for me and not get paid for it. They just quit.
Yep.
They don't call me up 2 days later and say, where's my money? I'm sorry, I'm not coming back. That's the last I hear from them is I don't feel well, and they're gone. And I just said, you got to be kidding me. And he said, no. Work? I've got more work than I know what to do with. As a matter of fact, I'm partnering with a guy in Putnam County who hasn't got as much work out there, and he's coming in here and doing a couple jobs for me, and I'm scraping a little bit off the top, for being the source of the work. He said, people do not want to work.
You're right, Larkin. You know, we mentioned this once before, and people went and they did check out everything that I said, and it's a fact. We now are in a situation where 10,000 Americans retire every day. Some of those people in the last 5, 6, 7 years were asked to come back and stay on the staff because they were hard to replace. So they did. They stayed many years after retirement. And now, because of health reasons, because the spouse has other issues that need to be taken care of, they are stepping out of the workforce. There's no new people coming up in the workforce to take their place. What you're describing is something I deal with on a regular day-to-day with situations. We can't even find people to do health care services, nothing. And you very nice people. I did it for 3 days. I cannot listen to that person complaining to me, telling me their whole life story and all. I decided to give up in this career field that I thought that I could try by going to this agency and getting some training. When I was doing the training, it was one thing. But when I had to actually go out and deal with the homebound clients, I decided I can't take it. So this is where I say so often, and we've discussed it 1,000 times, where our grade schools, our upper grade schools, 7th, 8th grade, our middle schools and our high schools really have to get back to brass tacks and get people to think about what they would like to do when they become an adult. And what are they thinking? And we should have those types of services available for them to give it a try for 6 months. And then another 6 months, try something else. We don't have that. The problem in our school systems now, and I want to say this because we got on a very good subject. This is a problem with our federal budget and our state budgets. The federal budget used to require that you give a proposal of what you would do for the money in your particular state. Then the state would have to go before various school boards and say how they were going to use the money. That wasn't happening for many years. They would just say, we need the money, expenses are going up, we had to cut this, we had to cut that. And guess what was one of the biggest things that they cut? Trade programs, all the things that kids would like to see if they have any interest in the future, all those programs were diminished. They said, no, everything is going to be computerized now. We don't need that and this and that. We're finding now that this has been a 25-year mistake. Luckily, I might say, that school board meetings, and Rich Logis knows this, are now being attended by more parents than were attending in the last 20 years. Because people want to know what their children are being exposed to, what they're being taught, what their future endeavors could be if they continued in that school. We haven't done that for a long, long time. And we're talking about it more, not through the national media, but through local radio broadcasts like this. And through, you know, getting the people out at meetings and talking at public events, we're trying to encourage people to be the leading role in governing their children for the future. Because if we don't, we're going to have what we have now, and it may even go down a lot. Right now, if you can look on the debt clock, which is run by the United States government, we have 39 million people living in poverty. Of that 39 million people, 25 million are working age and able-bodied. We also have 11 million people listed at unemployment. You put those two together, you have 35 million working age and able-bodied people that could be in a job training program. And after the job training program is over, then go into a work situation. The fact of just sitting back and collecting and having 1,001 excuses to collect should no longer be continued. And I think it's up to all of us, every listener, every community leader, to speak up and say, we want to know what the next governor is really going to do, not just talk his way into the office, but what he's really going to do. We want to know exactly what the next president is really going to do. Obama said he was going to focus on the green energy. Trump was letting gas and the flow of energy in America grow. Then came Biden. He puts this executive order in to slow everything down. We should know, and we should have been told that during the campaign and said, no, this is not what we're all about. We have to be realistic. We need every type of fuel in this country. We have 200 years of gas in America itself. What are we wasting our time having all this inflation and all, and having 535 people in Washington, D.C. doing nothing, afraid to insult the president by saying, no, we have to see how it'll work out. How long are we going to see how it'll work out? 6 years, 10 years? By that time, America will be bankrupt if this continues. Right now, this is considered by most people as the fleecing of the people of the United States of America. Uh-oh. As you can hear by the music, it's time to say farewell. First of all, I want to say thank you to everybody that I saw in the Bridesburg Memorial Day parade and events. And I'm going to remind you that the first Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of every month is National Small Business Weekend. That's coming up already this week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Please go out and support your local businesses. And while you're there, take a look at every label and ask them to seek out more American-made products, because I hate to say this, they are on the shelves, but the merchandisers that provide the stuff to the stores don't want to take them off their supply shelves and give them to the stores, because they make more money from the foreign-made stuff. That's why I'm proposing the VAT tax, the value-added tax. Larkin, Rich, thank you so much. May God bless you and God bless America.